Okay. So my agenda is to try and complete the discussion on advertising systems, search advertising systems that we just started talking about last class. And as I said, if I didn't say, then I will say that every class could be converted into a whole course. Classification can be a course, clustering can be a course, or both of them together can be a course, and advertising can be a course. And in fact, this link here, it's actually, it's going, right now there's a course that's going on at Stanford by two guys in Yahoo who actually, you know a lot about search advertising, and they're running an entire course just around that, okay? So we'll just do it in one class because we are much faster than them. But if you want to go slower, then you know, you can read more information there, okay? And then after that, I am going to start talking about the third part. I don't know which part is third part anymore, but the last part of the course is exploiting and specifying and exploiting structure. Remember, in the very beginning of the course, we said if you have structure, then you can ask more interesting queries. And until now, we basically never really looked that much at structure. In fact, the only time we looked at structure was when we had HTML tags. And we sort of said anything in the header will get slightly more importance than anything in the footnote font. So if you give some structure, I can use it, essentially. So we will look, the rest of the course actually after this topic is about how to specify and extract structure. Either you specify structure, or if you don't have a way of specifying it, you know, extract it from the non-unstructured data, and then how to use it, okay, which is basically the last part. Okay, before I go on advertising, are there questions? Yes?
I was looking at the rest of your schedule. Did you actually have a second midterm exam, or was it just...
Did I write second midterm exam?
Is there?
I didn't know that I wrote. I mean...
I don't think... No, you didn't.
No, there is no second midterm, no. I mean, I think...
Final comprehensive?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I think so. I mean, unless I tell you otherwise, but, you know. Other questions? Yeah? Yeah.
How can you give an example or something? Because from what I understand, it's all based on text. So are you trying to say that if you have content-based filtering for, say, the movie domain?
No. So that's an interesting question. So for example, so first of all, in general, content-based filtering depends on there being features. Okay. If you just happen to assume that words are features, then presumably, yes, in fact, it becomes, the domain there is just word feature, okay? And then there are many, many normal domains that can be written in text, okay? A more useful way of thinking about, that's a good question, actually. So mostly people are talking about the fact that for the restaurant, the attributes were whether he will wait, I mean, how many patrons are there, etc. And if it is something like the movies, then it might be, is it an action movie, is it something else? You know, is it an action movie, is it a sad movie or a happy movie, does it have, is it an ensemble movie or is it a single character movie? These are all the features there, okay? Now if you ignore all the features and just go with the text description of the movies, then yes, I mean, then basically it becomes domain free there, in the sense it just becomes only in terms of words, except those are going to be useless. I mean, your predictive power would be much, much less if I just go with words, okay? Even for book descriptions, you notice that you essentially talk about title and maybe reviews and maybe price, etc., and each of which are bags of words. So instead of just thinking of this as undifferentiated mass of words, you tend to think of them as vectors, you know, vector of bags, okay? Whenever you're doing this, then you are sort of talking about what are the features that are relevant to the domain under consideration.
So you're basically doing it so that your prediction
levels can go up. Exactly. That's very much the case. So if you start from text descriptions and you try to make sense of this, you know, yes, you can do that, you know, but your prediction level will be lower, basically.
Because it seems, I have the data that this guy reads books also. Then it makes sense to recommend him.
But that is not going to be written anywhere in the text description of those books, for example. In fact, that is a classic example where the text description of books may not have anything about text description of sports. And yet, one guy just put them together because essentially you are now defining them in a different feature space. You're defining in terms of the users who use them together. Okay? Other questions? Okay. So, last class we were looking at the advertisement, search advertising and the history of search advertising, and also talked about, we looked at the history of search advertising and then the fact that there are, in understanding search advertising as a recommendation system, it's somewhat different from normal recommendation systems because it's a three-party situation, not a two-party situation. Normal recommendation systems, it's either one party or two party. Okay, in the search advertisement, there is basically three parties: the search engines who want to show you advertisements so that if you click on them, they get money from the advertisers. Okay, and the advertisers who assume that if you somehow get into their shop, then you might buy something, and then you actually just probably don't want to see any advertisements at all, but if you are forced to see advertisements, you would like to see the ones that are sort of relevant to you. Now, the same word, relevance, as again, just as we talked about, we want to see relevant results for the queries. Similarly, we want to see relevant advertisements for whatever we are doing at that point of time. Okay, so those are three different parties and their utility measures. So in some sense, if you're talking about what's the best search advertising system, somehow it has to take into account the utility metrics of all of these, all three of them. Okay, so from the point, but the interesting question, of course, is sometimes they are synergistic, they kind of mesh well. Sometimes they're actually, locked horns, they don't actually mesh well. Okay, so that was what I was talking about at the very end of class. So advertisers, let's see. So basically, these are the three parties. And there can be conflicts and synergies in the sense when you, for example, search engines as well as advertisers want more clicks. So they both like to get more clicks, okay? Search engines and users want good ads because if there are no good ads, then people are not going to click, so search engine is unhappy. And if you are forced to see bad ads, then you get, probably dissatisfied with the search. The fact that there are already advertisements, but there are also crummy advertisements might make you feel much, much worse off. So that's the user thing. And the only thing users can do is withhold their click. If they get, if they get annoyed, then they won't click, basically. Okay. And in these cases, at least search engine and advertiser, search engine and users have synergies, but not all three together. Okay. And similarly here, conflicting utilities, higher cost per click is better for search engine, but it's worse for the advertiser, right? And similarly, if I show lots and lots of irrelevant advertisements, these get to annoy the users, but maybe some of them will get clicked, and so advertisers and search engines will still do fine altogether. Okay. In fact, I don't know how many of you, I think I probably clicked on advertisements on the site maybe once, and after that I put ad block, so I haven't clicked. So again, as I said, don't look at the world based on your lifestyle, then you will design crummy products, okay? right? Because there may be people who apparently, click on these advertisements. That's why Google is as, rich a company as it is. So coming back to this, if you're talking about how to do this, a search advertisement system, then you need to kind of balance these utilities. Okay, so at some top level abstract way, I would say the utility of the overall system is somehow a combination of the utility of the advertiser, the user, and the search engine. Some arbitrary function. And then you have to figure out what that function is, and then you need to write it as an optimization problem. Okay, but that's normally pretty darn hard. So instead, you might essentially, for example, a simple idea might be that somehow it's some linear combination of the utilities. Even there, you need to sort of figure out how to give utilities for each of these. Maybe the search engine and the advertiser, their dollar value is their utility itself. I'm sorry, for the search engines, the dollar value is the utility. For the advertisers, it's already intangible. The number of converted sales is the utility, eventually. Just people coming onto your store and going away is making you poor, making the search engine rich. And that's not useful, right? And then for users, it's the relevance of the ad. Did they get any sort of fun clicking this and some satisfaction clicking this? So somehow you need to, you know, combine these, and you know, maybe you can think of linear, but that's just generally too hard. Mostly what we will be looking at and what people try to do is, because it's a complex enough optimization problem, you try to maximize, and then furthermore, it's a complex enough optimization problem, and B, all the chips are controlled by the search engines. In essence, they are taking the bids, they are showing the results, right? So to some extent, you know, if they really screw up, then you know, users will leave the search engine and the advertisers will leave the search engine. But there is a reasonable amount of margin where they can play the game, right? And so we could think of basically, instead of this, you know, huge optimization problem, as if it's done by a fourth party who is neutral to all these three parties, you realize that it's actually done by sort of a search engine. So the search engine would be trying to maximize per search revenue, okay, subject to some reasonable constraints, saying don't make user utility fall too below. You know, maybe at least it should be greater than alpha. And then advertisers' return on investment, let it not fall too much below. You see what I'm saying? So you went from an optimization problem into a decision problem. Well, it's a multi-dimensional optimization problem into a single-dimensional optimization problem with two decision constraints. That's what you did. Okay, even this is mostly here to kind of make you think of the complexity of the overall problem. Okay, so what I'm going to do next, really, is start from the simplest case and start adding complexities, start adding twists. Okay, by the end of which there'll be enough twists and you might very well know how to handle each one of the complications independently. That's the hope, that at least you will know how to handle each of the complications independently. But as I'm talking about it, in the back of your head, you have to keep thinking, well, you know, you handle this problem, this problem, this problem, but all of them have to be handled together. Would it be the case that the solutions will, you know, for individual problems can be just added together or not? Okay, that's something that, you know, really I will end the lecture by saying all of them have to be handled together, but I will tell you at least how to handle pieces. That's more or less what I can expect, what you can expect today. Okay, so the simplest case of the advertisement problem is the following, okay? So I would just think of there being a stream of queries coming to the search engine, okay? And the advertisers, they have bid on the queries. They said, if somebody asks query Q1, then we want our advertisement to be shown to that user. And if they are asking for query Q2, we want our advertisement to be shown to the user. Okay, and so they basically, since all of them want to be shown, then the search engine basically says, okay, if I were to show them your advertisement, what do I get? And in the old print media, just showing itself, the search engine should get you some money. So if I print an advertisement, so imagine New York Times is making specialized editions for each home, then just to show somebody's advertisement in your edition, then they will take some money upfront. Okay? But search engines basically say, well, you don't have to pay us right away. If the guy clicks on your advertisement, then you have to pay us. And you would pay what we have, there is a contract agreement we get into upfront, okay? So for example, each of these guys say that, okay, I will pay for this query, for query Q1, A might be saying I'll pay $5, you know, nobody actually pays $5, but let's say 5 cents if they click on this, my advertisement, okay? And B says I'll pay 8 cents if they click on my advertisement. Somebody says $10 if they click on my advertisement. Okay, now the queries are coming one after other, okay? And remember that you have to make a decision for each query as to which advertiser to show. And one more simplification I'll make is for each query, you'll only show one advertisement. So you notice already I made a lot of simplifications. You know how advertisement already sort of works, you know, that you see that I've already simplified the problem down to queries are what people are bidding on, and you are only essentially showing one advertisement per query, and these queries are coming in a stream, and for each then you have to pick an advertiser. Okay, and let's assume in this particular case all I really care is to maximize the revenue that the search engine gets. Okay, now notice that if I were to tell you by now until evening the following, I'm sorry, this is already evening, by now until midnight the following 10 billion, the sequence of 10 billion queries will come. If I were to tell you that, okay, then you can actually look at all the bids that people have and then make a single decision saying what are all the advertisements you're going to show from now until midnight. That would be solving this problem offline and then executing it. But you can't actually use that because you don't know what queries are going to come by from now until midnight. So in some sense, you need to make decisions as the queries are coming in. Do you understand what I'm saying? So in this is a scenario where had somebody given you all the queries up front, even though this problem might be easy enough, but if, you know, here is the kind of problem where if I have told you what are all the queries that are going to come, right, then you may be able to decide who should you show to each of the queries once and for all. But in the right now in this case, you don't have that information because the queries are coming one by one. Okay, so you need to make an online decision. Okay, which for this particular case is easy enough, but online decision sometimes can get you into trouble. Okay, so if you're solving a problem using online decision, so for example, I gave you a long 20-page midterm, and I keep telling you guys, please, please look at all 20 pages once, just 10 seconds spend looking at all the 20 pages before you start spending time on, you know, answering queries. Why? Because then you will know where are the easy problems, where are the hard problems, and you can make a globally optimal decision as to how to do the midterm. What do you guys do? You want to do online decision making. Okay? The first problem is LSI. Let me spend my waking hours doing LSI and then say I have no more time left. Okay? So here is a situation where the problem could have been done both in online and offline fashion, and you chose to do it in online and you pay the price. Okay, in general, if a problem can be done both in online and offline fashion, the optimal solution for doing it offline cannot be worse than the optimal solution for doing it online. Do you understand what I'm saying? You would never ever ask people, unless you have this kind of a problem, that the very fact that there is an LSI problem in the 14th page, you know, kind of terrorizes you so much that you can't do any problem starting from the first one. What's your name? I forgot because there's LSI problem, right? In that case, it's not going to help, you know. But in general, for normal people, having extra information, you know, is not going to worsen their performance. Okay? So we are basically looking at online algorithms here. Okay? In this particular case, it turns out that if I were to, the simplest online decision I can make is as soon as I get a query, I look at the, you know, user who has the advertiser who has the best bid for that query and pick that advertiser and show that. This is an online version. It turns out that that greedy algorithm in this case is optimal because there are no other constraints. You know, in some sense I'm saying advertisers have infinite amounts of budgets. They're willing to pay forever and ever. Okay, and you're only showing one advertisement per query. And so in essence, the online version, which is to maximize search engine revenue, basically you need an online algorithm, and a greedy algorithm, which is just picking greedily the advertiser who is paying the most for this query, okay, is in fact also optimal. Okay, when you're talking about online algorithms, there is this whole technical point called competitive ratio. So what's competitive ratio? So had you seen the midterm end to end once and decided the optimal way to do the midterm, and then based on that, you're going to get 56 marks on the midterm, and you did just online, that, you know, let midterm just come in the order it is coming and I'll try my best, okay? And then you got 47 on the midterm, then your competitive ratio of your decision is basically 47/56. In some sense, remember, even when the questions are coming page by page by page, you get to decide when to give up. I think most of you realize that spending, you know, 1 hour 40 minutes or 1 hour, you know, 10 minutes on the first question is a little too much when there are 19 more pages left. Okay, so you will do some kind of a decision online saying, okay, I'm not going to spend any more time on this on this question, I'll go into the other questions. So then you will not still get the optimal amount of marks. You know, if you are smart, all of you think you are that smart in making these online decisions, that's why you don't want to waste those precious 10 seconds looking at the rest of the exam, right? And so if you are really smart, then the competitive ratio for you should be 1. Do you understand? I mean, so it's not that looking at the entire exam would have given you 65. If your understanding of the subject is about 10%, then you would never get 65 out of 65, right? But you should get whatever you're supposed to get, at least. And that's basically the competitive ratio. So the best an online algorithm can do is to do as well as an offline version which has all the data in front of it, and then used it to compute the optimal way to solve the problem. And then if you compare the performance of the online versus offline, that's called the competitive ratio, and that's always less than or equal to 1. If it is 1, you are a really lucky person. You got a really smart online algorithm. Okay, so it turns out that for this simple scenario, just greedy selection is an online algorithm, and it has competitive ratio 1 in this case. You can't do any worse. You know, even if you had all the ads in front of you, you wouldn't have done anything different because there are no additional constraints. Okay, the way things will become interesting, we'll see in a minute later on, if people have budget restrictions, then suddenly you want to know, you know, who to show what. Okay, but we'll get to that there. Okay, so this is the simplest case. Now I'm going to start. Did people understand this? This is the simplest kind of search advertising. Okay, yes.
How do the advertisers bid for price?
Let's assume that they said basically that I'm going to pay $5 for Q1, $3 for Q2, $7 for Q3, and so on. That's what they said. No, there is a way they actually bid. They specify their bids up front. In fact, by the way, I seriously suggest that all of you, if you have Gmail account, like Google account, you all have free advertising budget. As far as I know, they keep bothering me saying, we put $10 in your analytics budget. Why don't you make a query? And why don't you sell stuff? You know, eBay used to ask me to sell my entire home, and now Google is asking me to also sell entire home, right? I would suggest that you make a query and play with it. This is a great way for understanding what they are asking. So basically, you can make your own advertisement. I would suggest, for example, just as an idea, all of you should advertise CSE 494. You know, right? For any possible interesting query, CSE 494 advertisement should come first. Okay, that's, and you know, you can pool your advertisement and make it the advertisement that comes anytime anybody is looking about ASU. Forget about football and Kerry Business School, which is what we keep seeing. Okay, so that's the way you actually can figure out. You set the bids that you are putting. Okay, and that's, in fact, that's a full thing, and all of you can do it. All these search engines, certainly Google and also Facebook, they all make this interface easy enough that anybody can put advertisements up. In fact, this is the whole point, right? This is, in the old days, people who will put advertisements are those who have deep pockets. And they will put like full page advertisements or half page advertisements and so on. Now anybody can put advertisements for anything. As I said last class, you know, the guys who are running that course, they put an advertisement saying, come to this course. And you can play with this. Okay? Anyway, so any other questions on this? This is the simplest case. Okay, if you were last here, then you're last anyway. Okay, so the next first complication I'm going to look at is, suppose one guy says, you know, for this query Q1, I'm going to pay $10. And the other guy says, I'm only going to pay $5. My previous example, I'm just saying my idea is to pick the $10 one. But what if, remember that it's not enough to just, as soon as I show the advertisement, I don't get the $10. I have this, you know, pesky user in the stream, and the pesky user has to click on it, right? If the user doesn't click, then there's no point in, you know, showing the advertisement, because, you know, you won't get any money. Now suppose the guy who is paying $10 basically is writing probably borderline offensive stuff in those three lines of advertisement. The guy who is paying $5 actually has some reasonable thing to sell to you. So the offensive stuff, unless you are masochistic, you are not going to click on it. Okay? The fact that he's paying $10 is of no use if historically nobody is clicking on this advertisement. Right? So this brings up the issue that essentially you should not be ranking, should not be showing the queries, the advertisement of the biggest bidder, but advertisements of the bidder times the probability that their advertisement will be clicked on by a user. The expected return, okay, right? Expected return, okay? So now how do I get the expected return? I need to figure out some historic way of keeping track of who are, you know, clicking on these advertisements from this particular advertiser, okay? Suppose I kept track of those. So for example, and I kept track of these probabilities, I learned these probabilities. In the first few times, I'll take a hit, and then I'll be showing probably the guy with, you know, that's why this is very important to randomize. If you kept only showing the $10 guy, you would never make any money, neither will you learn anything. You would probably think that nobody ever sees any advertisements, you will change your business, right? So what you really need to do is, when you are learning, this is a very deep point, when you are learning, you need to explore. Okay? So in the beginning, you probably have to show some of the other guys once in a while, just so that you will get the click-through rates. So you learned that, and you have this information saying, for this, you know, for this kind of advertisement, people are clicking on it with a 0.1 probability, this guy's advertisement, they're clicking on it with 0.5 probability. The better these numbers are, and the better they are going to be, the more exploration you have done, right? The better those numbers are, the better your expected numbers are as to how much you are expected to get if you were to put this guy in as the advertisement for that query, right? Okay? So now this click-through rate is measured historically, and the simple solution is, instead of raw bids, use the expected revenue per click. Now the new online algorithm is still greedy, except greedy in terms of expected value rather than greedy in terms of just the maximum value of bid. Once again, you can't do any better probabilistically than this.
It should be expected revenue per showing.
No, not showing, for clicking. Because the point is, you don't get any money by for showing the advertisement. That's the whole point of search engine advertising.
But expected revenue per click.
So what I'm saying is, when you are putting in the advertisement, you are trying to ask yourself, how much money can I expect to get from this advertisement? And that depends on the expected number of clicks times the bid. Okay, so if the probability of click is 0.5, then each time I show, I expect about 50 cents. And here I expect 0.2, you know, 20 cents. Okay? Fine. So again, it's an online algorithm, and it's probabilistically optimal. So showing you all the advertisements, all the queries up front, couldn't have made your performance any better than this online version. Notice that you could do bad online algorithms. Okay, so for example, I will pick, you know, in the previous case, I will pick, I don't like the big versus small, I'll just pick the medium bids. That would be an online algorithm, you'll get medium revenue. Unless you wanted to get medium revenue, in which case, of course, the optimal guy will pick the optimal, you know, one, and so your competitive ratio sucks at that point. So you can make bad online algorithms. Till now, you know, pretty much the obvious online algorithm turned out to be also the best one. Okay. Next, so anyway, this is an example of this, and you know, I don't know that you really need to go through this that much, but if there are three advertisers, A, B, C, for this query, one is paying $1, 75 cents, 50 cents, then if you don't have the click-through rates, you will essentially show probably A. Not probably, you will show A for that query. But if in fact the click-through rates for this guy historically are 1%, 2%, 2.5%, then you can compute the expected value of showing this ad. This is 1 cent, 1.5 cents, 1.25 cents, and so you will show that first. This was a huge, big difference in search engine advertising, because in the beginning they were showing the first one. The overture was doing the first idea. And then a little later they started actually keeping track of click-through rates and started doing the second one. Remember that while if I were to give you the probabilities and you ignore it, I can make fun of you. If you don't have, if I didn't give you the probabilities and you did not get the idea of tracking the probabilities, it's, you know, that's very much likely that you didn't think that you need to learn anything more than what was provided in the specification of the problem. In this case, you had to provide, learn, explore and learn the probabilities, click-through probabilities. That's an interesting learning problem. But, you know, I mean, the right way to learn this, that's a very interesting question in itself. But you can think of some reasonable ideas at least. Okay? So, that's complication one. That's complication two, right? I got two complications. No, that's complication one, good. I'm just worried that my complications have complications. How many of you have seen Brazil? The movie, okay, anyway. The second complication I'm going to look at is that advertisers are actually bidding on keywords, not on queries. Okay? And in fact, that's what happens. In fact, the idea of bidding on queries can be a few words long. It can be a large number of words long. So especially when search engines are showing you advertisements for your emails, there is no query in the email. The subject is not a query. The body is not a query. And yet they somehow try to say, well, you know, if you are looking at this kind of emails, you may be interested in looking at these kinds of advertisements. So in essence, they're thought of doing some kind of a keyword-based showing of advertisements. Okay? So that basically, if you are doing, advertisers are doing keywords, then in essence, multiple keywords might match a particular query. Okay? And so in fact, there is that complication. So basically, instead of, you know, each query and the different bids for that query, now each query has different keywords and each keyword set has different bids. Okay? So, and then one way you could do this is that if you have keywords, essentially, you need to figure out. So here is what happens. So I have my query or page content. Okay, our mail content. And then the users, the advertisers have said, if you have K1, K2, show my advertisement, I'm going to pay you some money, okay, 50 cents. And if you have K3, K4, K5, I'll pay something. And, you know, when you have multiple keywords, you can also think of them as search phrases. Okay, so then the question, of course, is they did not bid on this query. I need to figure out whether to show this or not based on whether these keywords are similar to this query. That's the IR problem. Right? So in essence, to support this, you need to, first of all, pick top K similar advertisements to the query, and then among them, you know, sort them in terms of the CTR times the bid for those, and then show the one with the highest. That's the basic idea. But to be able to do this, notice now your IR stuff that you've been talking about before comes in. First of all, you can do exact matching, you know, Boolean-based matching. You can do vector similarity kind of a stuff. You can also do query rewriting. For example, if somebody says digital camera, okay, then you may be able to rewrite. So if somebody says this, you know, it's a camera, then you may be able to say, rewrite this as camera, digital camera. That means I added an extra word. That's like query elaboration. At that point, then it might exactly match something. Do you see what I'm saying? So the entire set of how do you decide whether a page is similar enough to a query, you can also play that same game and say whether a query is similar enough to an advertisement. And if it is similar enough, you want to show it. Okay, you want to show the ads that are similar, presumably, because otherwise the users are not likely to click on them. okay? And among them, you basically take the bid time CTR to pick the one advertisement that's the best among the public and show just that one. Right? So that's the complication two. Okay. Now, complication three is that I might actually want to show more than one advertisement per query. Why should I show only one advertisement per query? Okay, so I can have advertisers bidding on keywords, and I want to show multiple advertisements. That's what you see right now. Okay, obviously, if you show 1800 advertisements, it's completely useless. Okay, so you probably tend to decide upfront. I mean, the search engine decides maybe I'll show at most 5 advertisements. You also see that for some queries, they show more advertisements than other queries. Right? Okay, so you may want to show multiple advertisements. Now, the interesting thing is the moment you are showing multiple advertisements, just the same issue. If I need to show you a single best document that's similar to the query, you pick the document that has the highest vector similarity, let's say. If you're going to show 2 documents that are similar to the query, it's no longer the case that the second one is going to be the one with the second highest vector similarity, but rather the one which has the second highest residual similarity. That means it's not only similar to the query, but far enough from the other document. Okay, so that's one issue. Okay, the second issue in the advertisement, it's actually also an issue for the search results too, but even more so for advertisements, is that basically if I look at an advertisement that's very similar to the second one is very similar to the first one, I'm probably not likely to click on it. Even if I saw it in isolation, I may have clicked on it. Okay, that's the issue of ad similarity. The other thing is that the first advertisement was so offensive that it turned you off of browsing. You wanted to get off, shut off the computer and go have a cup of coffee and then, you know, start thinking about world again. In which case you abandoned search. If you abandoned the search, the second guy is waiting for customers to come. You know, it's like, you know, it's a long line of, in a small thin road with long line of shops. The first shop guy was so offensive that everybody is not even entering the street. So all the other guys who are nice and polite and are selling good stuff will never get any customers. Right? So there's this question of abandonment issue, you know, whether people will just stop browsing afterwards. All of these will come into play when you are trying to decide how to rank the advertisements. Until now, you did not rank the advertisements. You are only showing one. You now are showing multiple advertisements per query. Okay? So you need to worry about the inter-ad correlation, which is a diversity issue. You also need to worry about the user browsing patterns, in the sense the user might just get sick and tired of browsing and stop, you know, after some time. Okay, so those two have to be taken into account in ranking the advertisements. Okay, now there's Raju who's sitting here mostly to check whether I'm making sense at all, because he actually knows this area much better than me, and he has done some work earlier on actually what's the right way to rank results when you're taking into account both the inter-ad correlation and the browsing abandonment probabilities. In particular, he actually points out that if you are taking inter-ad correlation, that is the diversity issue, into consideration, then the optimal ranking is NP-hard. And you don't want to do NP-hard computations at the time when you're showing the answers to, you know, users, at least not optimally. And so if you ignore that, then he essentially says, for each advertisement, you can compute a score which is based on the bid amount and the abandonment probability and the relevance of the ad. And then you can rank the advertisements according to this score, and then that would be optimal. Okay? If you're interested, ask him more, but I'm just trying to show you that it becomes more interesting than just picking one ad. And then you need to consider the interrelation. Okay, so that's that. Complication four. Up until now, online is no worse than offline. Really, if you had sense, you could get your competitive ratio to to be as high for the online algorithm, I mean the competitive ratio to be 1, basically. Okay? The question then is, when does it become not possible? Here is one example. Advertisers have limited budgets. Okay, so in fact, when you go and make an advertisement using your, you know, maybe everybody, I think Google puts $10 in your account anyway, and you can make an advertisement for $10. If you just say, ah, go ahead and pay, you know, and here is my credit card number, then, you know, by day after tomorrow, all your friends who heard this kept clicking on your advertisement, you ran out of all your money, and you have no money, you drop out of grad school, and so make money. But that's a different story. So the point is that, the point is that you have budget restrictions for individual advertisers. This winds up making the problem not equivalent to the, so the online version of the problem no longer has the competitive ratio 1. Okay, so to understand this, take the following simple example. So again, assume that bids are 0 or 1. So everybody is bidding, you know, 1 for every advertisement, every query they want, and if they don't like it, they'll put 0. Okay, all the advertisers have the same budget, B, simple case. Okay, but B is not infinity. That's the important thing. We assumed essentially infinity before. Okay, B is finite. Okay, so, and I'm showing one advertiser per query still. Let's try the, so now if I'm doing greedy algorithm, you know, either based on CTR or just based on bid. For now, assume CTR for all one. Okay, because that complication is sort of orthogonal to this, at least right now. Okay, so you have A and B, and A bids on query X, and B bids on query X and Y. Okay, and so of course A bids, A'll give you $1 if you show his advertisement for X, and B will give you $1 if you show her advertisement for either X or Y. Okay, now both have budgets of $4, that's it. So after 4 advertisements, they can't pay you any money. Okay, suppose my query stream is this. From now until midnight, these are the queries that are going to come. X, 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 and Y, 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 Y. If you know all of them, you know what's the right thing to do. Do you not see it? Right? Because you should save the Y's. Okay? So basically, because B can take either X or Y, and A only likes X. So if you start using up all your B's here, then you have nothing to show after this. Do you see what I'm saying? Right? Had you seen all the queries, unless you've been dropped repeatedly on the head, you would have realized this. And you would have realized that you can make as much, basically you can show, you know, 4 plus 4 advertisements and get $8. That's what you could get, assuming CTR equal to 1. But if they're coming one by one, you don't know the future. Okay, when I just show you X, you have no idea what's happening behind the X. Okay, that was the case before too. And yet you could do greedy before and get away. Here if you do greedy, you could very easily get into trouble because you could do pretty arbitrarily bad competitive ratios. In fact, how bad can it get? It turns out stupidity also has like a bottom line. It turns out that the worst case greedy choice is putting B in the beginning for this case, all B's, in which case you'll get $4 out of a total of $8 you could have gotten. So your competitive ratio is half. Okay, half you can get. Okay, the question is, can you do better? Optimal obviously is AAABBB. But you can't really do optimal unless you knew the queries, unless you knew the future. You know, what's happening here is hindsight optimization. You figured out how the future evolved and then said, I could have done slightly better. Right? Online algorithms always have to do this. By the way, many things that we'll talk about in today's class, they're much more general than just search advertising. That's sort of true for classification too. It's more general than IR. Okay? And similarly here, online algorithms come all sorts of places in computer science. And whenever you have an online algorithm, the question you're asking yourself is, what is its competitive ratio? That means, how well does it do with respect to an optimal algorithm when the entire input is known upfront? Okay? So in this case, you know, if the competitive ratio is half, so the question is, can you do any better? Okay. Remember, the online algorithms can't think too much. They can't say, if it was to be the, if the second one is to be this, then do this. That makes no sense. You don't get to see the second one. You need to make a decision for the first one. So here is a situation where, in essence, I am giving you problems in midterm one sheet by one sheet. You really did not have the chance of looking at the entire midterm up front. As soon as you say, I'm done with this problem, I'll give you the next problem. You still have to make reasonable decisions. So for example, here is a problem I gave you, and if it is already 1 hour, 12 minutes, and you're still working on this problem, and I told you I have a total of 10 problems to come, you probably are clearly doing something wrong. You're not optimizing. But neither are you optimizing it if you kept saying no, no, no to the first 9 and then spent all your time on the 10th one, because you lost all the 9 problems marks. You see what I'm saying? And in life, you do online decision making. And the interesting question is, can you still be intelligent? Can you still actually say the online decision making you are doing has worst case performance guarantees, that the competitive ratio is closer to 1? You know, that's the question. So that's a beautiful question. No? Okay, so it turns out for this particular case, it's a very simple idea that works quite well, which is you pick the guy, is for this particular scenario, you pick the guy who has the maximum unspent budget left. So first of all, you got a query queue, and there are 3 guys who bid on query queue. Okay, this guy only $1 left, this guy has $10 left. So you give it to the $10 guy, because, you know, maybe this other guy, maybe that $1, he could spend it on some other query that you can get, make money off of. Notice that the search engines are not trying to make sure that people don't go bankrupt. They could care less. They would like all the advertisers to go bankrupt, and as long as they make money. The issue here is the $1 that you have, if you spend it on this, then you may not be able to spend it on something else, and I still have advertisements coming. And maybe you are the only guy who is going to pay $1 for CAC 494 advertisement. And so you're like a very precious kind of a guy. I want to keep you around. Okay? So I'm just going to look at how of the people, so of course you're also going to be, your $1 bid is also possible for, you know, some other advertisement about a movie. But I won't show you now. I'll show the other guy who has bigger budget left. This is not making any decisions about, it doesn't have any knowledge about the future. Do you see what I'm saying? It's not saying that certain kinds of advertisements will come later. It's just saying, of the 2 guys, you can't do worse by giving it to the guy with more budget left. Okay? And then break ties arbitrarily. If 2 people still, both of the guys, A and B, have the same amount of money left, then break ties arbitrarily. Okay? If you do that in this particular case, and you know, you can run this, balance would basically do this, optimal does that. Notice that the moment after it picks A, next time it can't pick A again, right, because A would have less budget left than B, so it will have to pick B. That's all you know. Okay, so if you do this, then the competitive ratio for this case is 3/4. With this just simple change, the competitive ratio is 3/4. It's a huge improvement, right? Okay, instead of half, it's 3/4. So you're making a lot more money. Who is making money here? Search engines. Who is designing algorithms? Search engines. And how much would they be interested in this? Of course, a lot. Okay, so the interesting thing is this idea, you probably could have thought about this. Okay, there is a paper based on this idea and this generalization in JSEM, which is the topmost journal in computer science. The reason is basically they'll also show that actually in the general case, the worst competitive ratio for this idea, that is using the remaining balance of the budget, the worst case competitive ratio would be around 1 minus 1 over E, or 0.63. which is less than 0.75. That's what happened here. It's not the worst case scenario for you. But it would not be 0.50 either, which is what the dumb algorithm does. Showing this is what got their paper, you know, much more interesting than just saying it's an idea. Okay? Yes?
You also take into account the probability that any of those queries that these guys are bidding for is going to come in the future.
that's again, you can make, as I'm talking about each complication, you can have complications having complications, or you can bring all the complications together. And that would change some of these things. I won't talk about it right now, but if you had that information available, you could do better, obviously. But this is completely agnostic to the future. It does not have any information about the future distribution of queries. If you happen to know the future distribution of queries and you decide not to use it, then, I mean, and if you decide to use it, then you can do better than this. Yes. Again, you're talking about distribution of how queries are coming. Whatever you do, you're talking about which queries are more likely to come in the future, which are coming likely to come in the past. So for example, even if I see, you know, XXXXX, is there a reason to believe that the next would be Y more likely than X? For example, I took a coin. Okay, here is something I want to ask all of you. I took a coin. I tossed it 15,000 times. It came heads. I'm about to toss it 15,001th time. Very good, right? I'm about to toss. What's the probability that it'll come ahead? 0.5. Most people in the world don't know it. This is why lotteries work. Okay? You go to Las Vegas and people say that lotteries are the way of siphoning money from stupid people and give it to smarter people. Right? So you go to Las Vegas and you'll say, oh, this thing hasn't come for a long time. So I'm pretty sure its time has up now. As if there's like some budget on the heads and tails. No, there's no budget on heads and tails. Do you see what I'm saying? More important question here is, you are not making any decisions based on the distribution of the queries. I'm not saying you shouldn't. This algorithm doesn't. So any algorithm that uses less knowledge is going to be more useful. Anything which uses more knowledge is going to be less useful but might do better. Yes?
But I see a flaw in that. If you choose the one with most boys still around.
What?
That if you choose a guy that has more money in his boys, that probably means that his query has a very low click-through rate because it's a bad query.
No, again, no. You could do this whole thing instead of bids, you can also talk in terms of, so let me look at the next one, okay? So here I'm assuming click-through rate is equal to 1, but the next I'll talk about the general case, okay? Okay, so this is special case and you can get 0.63 just by keeping track of the balance. More general case here is you have arbitrary number of bits, not all bits have to be equal sized. Here in the previous case we assumed each bit is $1 or 0, okay? But you don't have to be. Some people might bid $4 for one thing, okay? And not all advertisers have to have the same sized budget. Now, if you take that more general scenario, it turns out that if you directly apply the balance, which is the amount of money left, it doesn't look too good because the guy who tends to bid, so if I have, this guy has $4 left and this guy has $10 left, okay, you would think the $10 guy somehow has more time to live. But suppose just three queries back, this guy had $10,000 and he's now $10. Which means he was doing huge bids. He's doing like, you know, $7,000 for this query. So this guy's fraction of remaining budget is what you want to think about, not how much money is left. Previously, the fraction of the remaining budget is the same as remaining budget because you started with the same amount and your bids had the same size. Okay, so to generalize it, essentially, and I won't go into all the details here, to generalize it, if, for example, the bid is XI, you can, instead of thinking of bid value, you can also think of expected bid value, XI times CTR, right? Budget is BI, okay? And then the amount spent so far is MI, among the budget. Then the fraction of budget left over is FI, which is 1 minus MI by BI. That's the fraction left. Okay, so then you make this quantity, which is sort of balanced, expected balanced budget, which is XI times 1 minus e power minus FI. Okay, it has the correct qualitative properties. And essentially, if you use this and decide whoever has the maximum this value will get picked. Okay, so notice that in this case, if this guy is paying $10 for this query and probably used up most of his money, I may still pick him because everybody else is only paying $1 for this query. Previously, everybody who is bidding for the query was paying the same amount. So there is no difference in terms of bid amounts. Now there is. Okay, so you consider the bid times or the expected bid times amount of normalized amount of, you know, fraction of budget left. Okay, and if you use that, it turns out that, you know, if you give the query to the bidder with the highest such value, then it turns out that's a generalized online algorithm, and that too will have a competitive ratio of 1 minus 1 over E. And, you know, to understand the proof for this is obviously very interesting. I'm not even going to go into it. You can actually go and read that paper. You know, partly you can get an idea of exciting stuff that gets done, you know, in various areas. Okay, so that's to handle this complication of budget constraints, you need to come up with a more interesting online algorithm. It's still online, it's not making any assumptions about the future, but it's being smarter. Okay, that's possible. Complication four, yes. I understand. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, we'll not get, yes, in some sense, so your point is that I can change click-through rates for my competitor's advertisement by clicking it a lot.
No, not like that. I can keep some budget for, like, I'm a very popular brand, so I will keep for
rate very low, and my click-through rate will be high. So even if my competitor has a good name, I'm not sure. That's fine, but that's, search engine doesn't care. Search engine wants to know how much money they're going to make. So if you have, the thing is, it's not adversarial. If in fact, you know, Apple made iPad and HP made some other pad, right? And they both, in fact, one is cheaper than the other, nobody was buying this other thing. And would I say that somehow Apple was being adversarial? Not necessarily. I mean, they have done enough adversarial things in their lives, but this wasn't an adversarial thing. They just made a very good product and nobody else wanted to buy the other thing. And so there's a higher click-through rate for that. Okay, but in general, by the way, this class of all the things, there should be million questions like this that you should be thinking about. You know, if not, I would be surprised. Okay, I mean, in general, you know, because it's a pretty open-ended set of discussions that we're doing here. And again, you do this, you see this all the time, and you have reasonable intuitions, and, you know, I won't be surprised if you figure out all sorts of extra complications. But let me go through my complications. Oh, wow, this is my last complication, actually. So this is the balance. This one, actually, the interesting thing is that you no longer could do online. You needed to be smart about doing your online. Okay, that's the thing. Now, the last competition that I'm going to talk about is how do we encourage truthful bidding? This is actually a problem anytime there are auctions. Okay, just as the idea of generating good online algorithms is a problem anytime you are seeing the future piece by piece by piece and you have to make decisions for this part before you get shown the next part. And it just happens that here our class intersected with that deeper area. Okay? The second question is, the another kind of a complication like that is, look, we are making our entire decision making, that we being the search engines, are making decision making based on the bids that people are submitting. Now, how do you make sure that people will bid their true worth of that item to them? Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, when you are taking part in bidding, there's always this worry. There's always this worry that maybe I shouldn't bid all the things. I mean, suppose this thing is worth $10,000 for me. Maybe I don't want to, you know, open my mouth and say $10,000. Because maybe nobody else cares about it, in which case all I need to do is hang around, and, you know, if nobody says anything, then I'll get it for $1. Right? So the whole issue in auctions is basically you have to design a mechanism. This is a very deep issue. You have to design a mechanism where people cannot do better than being truthful in that mechanism. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you design a mechanism where by lying they can do better, they will lie because that's part of being smart. Do you understand? Whatever your preachers say, you know, you should be really happy that you know how to lie, because you understand that your brain is different from my brain and everything in your brain is not in your brain. And so I can make, I know something, but I will tell you something else. And that's, you know, ability to be smart. Okay. So the question is, given that you are dealing with smart people, which is all humans, it turns out, then how do I make sure that they're actually willing to be truthful? Okay. This basically, this is the place where we intersect with game theory. Game theory is all over the place. Okay. So this particular part of game theory we're interested in essentially is, how do you make sure that, so if they don't do truthful bidding, what happens? So for example, suppose I want to bid $2 per click on the phrase best ASU course, let's say. Okay. But if nobody else cares about this, why should I pay $2 to Google? I may want to just pay 1 cent if I'm the only guy, right? So how do I know that I'm not overbidding? The big issue in auctions oftentimes is what they call buyer's remorse. Okay, you get what you wanted, then you start thinking, oh man, I bid too much. Now what am I going to do with this junk? Let me just turn around and put it back on eBay and sell it higher. Okay, and hope that there are stupider people than me. But the point is, the question is, you should, in the optimal auction, you would be able to, I mean, if a well-designed auction, you will get the item and you would be happy. Because you gave away the money, that's worth to you, that represents the worth of this item to you. Okay, so you won't overbid, you won't underbid. That's what you need to do. Okay, so, but I would be thinking, $2 is the true worth of this advertisement to me, right? But I might be thinking, what if other people don't care about it? If I say $2 upfront and nobody cares and Google still charges me $2, I'm probably going to take this into consideration next time around and underbid. If I underbid, A, I won't get my advertisements, my items. By underbidding, you're reducing the chance that you get what you really want. B, the auctioneer is not getting as much revenue. If everybody underbids, then you are selling stuff for less than their true value for the social, for the society. Okay? Everybody individually making decisions in their own best interest. If you can somehow design a mechanism such that people will still do decisions such that the societal happiness will increase. That means both the auctioneer is happy, and the guy who gets the item is happy, right? That would be what you want to do, okay? So the classic idea that you would have thought, if everybody is bidding, like, you know, if I bid for $2, so assume that, you know, I'm going to bid $2 for this advertisement, you bid $1, you bid 50 cents, you know, the first idea would be to give it to Rao because Rao likes it. That's one point. The second question is, how much should we charge Rao? Normal idea is charge Rao $2. And then Rao would learn the lesson that next time around, I shouldn't tell what it's really worth to me. Because this other guy only, the most anybody came close to is $1. Why should I tell everybody that I need it as much as $2? So I will say maybe 90 cents. And then I won't get my advertisement. I won't get my eBay item. Okay? Now, an interesting version of doing this, basically, in all these cases, essentially, you are submitting your bid. These are called sealed bid auctions. So you're making your bid and you're telling the auctioneer. And nobody else knows your bid. And similarly, you don't know anybody else's bid. And all you know is what the auctioneer guarantees as to, you know, who will get the item and what price they would be charged. A normal idea is first price auction, where the guy who bids the maximum will get it, and they'll pay the money they bid for it. Unfortunately, as I said, that does not encourage truthfulness, which means both the advertisers and the search engines would be losing money on the whole, okay? So there is another idea called vickery auction, which is also called second price auction. And the idea there is everybody bids. The guy with the highest bid gets the item, but would only pay the second highest bid. Okay, so in the case I want it for $2, I bid $2, I submitted my bid as $2 in a sealed envelope, you submitted 50 cents, you submitted 30 cents. I will win. So I'll get the item, but I'll only have to pay 50 cents. This almost looks nonsensical. Why should people be allowed to pay the second bid? But the interesting thing is, by doing this, you encourage people to be truthful. Because in essence, what happens is, in game theory, the issue is, there are strategies that you are using. The question is, are there better and worse strategies? Okay? And it turns out that if the mechanism is second price auction or the Vickrey auction, then truthful bidding is a dominant strategy. That means the society and you don't do any better. Actually, you don't do any better. You, the winner, the buyers won't do any better by any other alternative strategy. Okay, now, I don't know how many of you have already heard of second price auctions, but if you haven't and if you're wondering why does this make sense, an insight is, think of how cattle auctions go on. Like, remember the cattle auction, the guy was saying $1, $1, $1, 2 cents, $1, 2 cents, $1, 3 cents, anybody for $1, 3 cents? I am pretty good at this. But the point is, what's the difference between that auction and this auction? There, it's non-sealed bid. Everybody's bid is in front of you. So you never tell anybody how much you like this cow. Right? You just sit around there. And then this guy starts with $1, $1, 2 cents, etc. And if the guy starts with, let's say, $1, who wants $1? And I'll raise my hand. And then if nobody else increases it, even if it actually is worth $100 to me, I only pay $1. If somebody does like it as much as $50, they will keep taking this auction up to 50. Then I will pay 50 plus epsilon and get it. So I'm essentially paying $50. The guy who wins the auction is the guy who added the last epsilon. And so they really are paying only 50. Nobody actually goes, unless in movies where this guy says $10 and the next guy says $10 million. Right? Nobody does this in cattle auctions at any rate. Right? It would be a really prize-winning cow. But the point is that you are essentially only paying if you know everybody's bid, then you're only paying the value that this cow has for the guy who likes it the second most, not the value you have for the guy that you like it. Do you see what I'm saying? So exactly this is what happens in open. I'll get to you later. There are many questions that you might have. I want to actually get through this point today, and then we can talk a lot more out of the class or later. Okay. If there's a lot of questions next class, I will spend time discussing those too. Okay. So this is worth remembering, that in fact second price is what you do in open price auctions, in essence. And in the sealed bid auctions, you're trying to, if you want to try and simulate the fairness of the open auctions. The problem with the open auctions at the internet scale is everybody has to be available at the same time and should be having those little things that they raise, saying $10, $20 more, etc. It's a very painful process to orchestrate, but it's a fair system. And Vickrey auction essentially is making sure that you get as fair a system as that, but with sealed bids. And since in an open auction you will never, unless you are again dropped repeatedly on your head, you will never bid more than what that cow is worth to you. If some guy says it's worth $100 to you, some guy says $5,000, you won't suddenly just say, to spite him, I'm going to take it $5,001. That makes no sense. If it's really worth $100 to you, you should keep your mouth shut and wait for the next cow. Right? Okay? So you will always speak your value truthfully, in essence. And you will only pay the second guy's price. This is what you should be using essentially in most auctions. The only question, of course, this is a nice slide explaining why it is the case that truthfulness is a dominant strategy for Vickrey auction. Okay, that means you can't do any worse than being truthful. I'm sorry, you can't do any better than being truthful. Okay, and this guy is Vickrey, and he got a Nobel Prize for this idea. Okay, but he proved it too. What? Economics is all about multi-agent intelligence. That's what it is. Okay? So the question, the last thing that I want to talk today is, you need to generalize this to multiple items. There the idea is there's one cow at a time, okay, and people are bidding on that cow, or one item at a time and people are bidding on that item. Most normal scenarios, you may have multiple items being sold at the same time, and people are submitting their bids to all these items at the same time. So you say, I have all these, you know, advertisement queries I am going to take bids for now. And everybody says, okay, this is my bid for this, 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 this. And these are, and somebody else gives another cheat saying, these are my bids for these queries. Okay, so in essence, you have a system like this. Essentially, there are two advertisers and two queries, you know, two fruits. Okay, and then this advertiser is willing to pay $25 for this and $20 for this. This advertiser is willing to pay $20 for this and $30 for this. And it's not one, they are willing to pay all that much. So this guy would like to take both if you give him. And this girl, and this guy will like to take both if you will give him. As long as, you know, you're using their bids. Okay? Once again, the question is, you have to give people a trust in the mechanism. That even though they are truly speaking what it is worth to them, that the search engine would not exploit it. I mean, the auctioneer would not exploit it and sell it to them at the price they bid, but only sell it to them at the price the next highest guy bid, in essence, for the single item. Okay? Now, if you have multiple items, then the question is, how do I generalize this? Now you have like two items and bid for all of them at the same time. The two related problems. One is allocation. Who gets what? So who gets the apple, who gets the banana? And then, don't answer the question yet. The second is, after I decide who gets what, how much are they paying for it? Okay? Who gets what is easy. Essentially, it's a maximal matching problem. So you have these edges in this graph, okay? You need to pick a set of edges such that there's exactly one edge on each of the items, if possible, right? And then the sum of their weights is the maximum, right? Okay, and whoever is getting what item in that matching, that is the person that gets that item in the allocation stage. The second question is, how much are they going to pay? The simplest idea, so in this particular case, I assume you would agree that this Alice would get the apple and Bob will get the banana, right? That would be the maximal matching. Okay, now the question of course is, how much is Bob going to pay for the banana, how much is Alice going to pay for the apple? Okay, you obviously have heard that there should be this thing about second price. Now the first idea would be to just say, well, look at who else are bidding for the apple. This guy bid, Alice bid 25, this guy is bidding 20, so I will, that's the second highest bid, so Alice will pay second highest bid in the current matching. In the current matching. And similarly, this guy would pay $20 for the banana. Right? Okay? Now, unfortunately, that is called the generalized second price auction, and it does not have the beautiful property that we talked about for the Vickery auction, where people have to be, the truthfulness is a dominant strategy. Okay, to get it right, so basically I can go from single Vickery auction to multi-item auction by first doing the matching and deciding who gets what, and then have to decide how the pricing works out. And for the pricing, if I just pick the second highest bidder for each of the items, according to the current matching, that's the easiest thing to do. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the property of the parent, which is truthfulness is a dominant strategy. And I can't even explain to you right now. You know, you should go back and look at it. What does work, and if you think about it a little, you will get it too. You know, here in this case, it turns out that the other strategy I'm saying will give the same answer. But imagine, if you will, and I'll try to give an example once I go back, there are many, many users, many, many items. What you really want to ask is, if Alice is getting the apple, the price that Alice should be paying for the apple should be decided not by who is you know, who was the second guy who is paying the Apple here, that guy may not be getting Apple in the, so here's the question. So if Alice was not there, so Alice goes home, takes her bid, 25, and goes home. It's not part of the graph anymore. Now you can still match and see who gets what. And whoever is the first highest bidder for Apple in that case, that is the true price of Apple if Alice weren't around. Now that as Alice is around, Alice just only has to pay what other people would have paid as the highest price if she wasn't around. Okay? It's a beautiful idea. Think a little bit more about this. Now the way to do this would be that you remove, there's a big graph here. You already matched once, you got the maximum matching and you figured out who gets what. Now I have to decide what is the price of the Apple. I remove Alice and the 25 link. I do another max matching. And you know, somebody gets Apple. That person may not be this, because there may be other people who are bidding for the Apple, and they may be bidding less than $20, and this guy won't get Apple because of some other complications. So in essence, you need to run that matching second time to get the price. That's costlier. But if you do that, you get what's called VCG auction, or Vickery Clark Gross auction. And that's the general auction here. General, that one has the truth being the dominant, truthfulness being the dominant strategy. Again, a beautiful idea that we just happen to come into because we're thinking of advertisement. And the last thing I want to say, and by the way, not surprisingly, this is the right thing to do for users to speak the truth. This is easier to compute, and it also turns out that it actually might sometimes actually increase the revenue for the search engine. And so, not surprisingly, most, I mean, at least apparently Google, again, these things are what any search engine does for advertisements is closely guarded secret. When poor Raju did his ranking stuff, he wanted to run it on some data to see that, to actually show that his work is better than what Google is doing. So we sent mails to Google and Yahoo. He got even an award from Yahoo from some other reason. And he said, why don't you share with me your advertising data? And they said, are you crazy? You know, we're not going to give you anything about your advertising data. Even Yahoo won't. And you can imagine, Google certainly won't. Right? So, but it is assumed that Google actually uses generalized second price auction rather than VCG, because that's actually harder to do, although it, you know, does truth. But if that looks like the end of the world, it's not, because in fact, what I did today in the class is to look at a bunch of issues, mostly sort of one by one. So I kind of looked at user interest. I took the CTR is the way user interest is taken into account. If the user was not clicking, then there's no point in showing this advertisement. I took into account search engine interest. I'm looking at the ranking so that people are likely to click. And the budgets, if you don't take the user's budget, the advertiser's budget, you may generate less revenue than otherwise. Okay? I also looked at advertiser's interest, because we talked about keyword bidding as against query bidding, and we looked at auctions, which sort of give guarantees to the advertisers that if they are truthful, in fact, the world doesn't end. But unfortunately, in fact, you know, that if you use VCG, okay? As if they're all sort of independent. But the tricky part is they're all interdependent. Okay? The actual bids depend on what the search engine is doing. So people will change their bids based on what the search engine is doing. The ranking depends on the bids. And so there's a lot more second order issues that I haven't gotten into. And this is the maximum I can do, given the scope of this course and given that there are a lot more interesting topics we still have to talk about. Okay? So I'll end here. Okay? If you have questions on this, send me email, talk to me after the class, or we'll talk a little at the next class.